We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to another episode of The Pod is the Roof, the Field of 68's very own UNC basketball podcast. Trying to keep the energy up in the intro, man. It's been a rough little stretch for Riley and I here. It's been some depressing times. UNC last night, we're recording the day after, as all of you who are watching this probably know, lost at the Carrier Dome to Syracuse. A lot of things happened, man. A lot of miscues on UNC's part. Syracuse had a once in a blue moon shooting night. Just everything that could have went wrong, man. We're going to be breaking it all down, talking about whether or not we should be panicking about this team, all the fun stuff, not the stuff we want to be talking about, but, you know, got to address the bad too. So, Riley, how are you doing, man?
I've been better. You know, it's from a fan perspective, comparing just the feeling of watching UNC drop the game last night to how we felt 10 days ago after beating Duke in a rather dominant fashion. It just doesn't really make sense how those were the same two teams with essentially the same rotation as well. And, you know, if it was a one-off, we'd feel a little bit better. But it's just starting to seem a little bit like a trend after dropping the home game to Clemson and almost letting Miami come back in a game where you went up 12 in the first half, to where it just seems like Carolina's late game executions really struggled. The defense is not looking nearly as connected or even as aggressive or as physical as it did a couple weeks ago. And I think this team desperately needs to get a couple home games in to sort of get right.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, they get to bounce back Saturday, home game against Virginia Tech. But then again, it's like Virginia Tech's a scrappy team, man. You always got to worry about the revenge game narrative. So Tyler Nickel might come in and drop 25. You just never know. And yeah, then it's, I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. You go from, like you said, 10 days ago, we're on top of the world. You know, it's, you dominated Duke. You control your own destiny to winning the ACC outright and grabbing a one seed, basically. And now you've put yourself in a completely different spot, man. Like, the only thing right. You got over Duke really is head-to-head unless they lose again. It's going to be tough. They do have a tough schedule down the stretch. North Carolina has a few tough games left as well. It does concern me, though, because it could come down to that last game in Cameron. So it's going to be tough, but, you know, let's, before we even get into last night, before we even get into Miami, any of that, I'm going to ask you the question, Riley. In your opinion, is it time to hit the panic button on the UNC Tar Heels?
I would say I'm more frustrated than panicked. Like, I don't know. I think there's a world where maybe they collapse and sort of stumble into the tournament as a five or a six seed or something and flame out in the first weekend. I don't think there's, it's really hard to envision them dropping below the five line, but it definitely seems possible to be a four or five seed and get picked off by a plucky mid-major in the first round. And we're all sitting around like, what happened? How did this team that was ranked in the top three for a large chunk of the season just flame out? And some of the same questions we had going into the year resurfaced about what's the trajectory of the program. At the same time, I think we have such a large sample size. I mean, we have a 20 game sample size of Carolina playing really well, and especially during that win streak of, I still don't think that the defense was a fluke. I don't think the 3-point numbers were a fluke. Some of it was lucky, sure, but the way they were running teams off the 3-point line, the way they were keeping teams out of the paint, the way they were playing aggressively in the gaps to get steals, all of that has just seemed to be dial has been dialed back a good bit since the Duke game. And that's where I don't know. Again, that's why I brought up the struggles on the road, and just wondering if, all these road games where they've like three of the last five games have been on the road, and then you go back to January where you played three straight road games, and yeah, there hasn't been an extended homestand, and you just wonder does that wear on the psyche? Not to mention like maybe you got a little overconfident after how they beat Duke and how in the second half it wasn't much of a contest. These are still college students. These are still a lot of guys on this team who haven't experienced success at this level before, and it would make sense if it got to their head a little bit. But how about you? Where are you at as far as in terms of the panic button?
If we're scaling it 1 to 10, I'd say I'm probably at about a, I'd say I'm probably in like the 5 to 6 range. And the only reason I say that is because the Georgia Tech loss was a little different, but these last two to Syracuse and Clemson, the two worst things that you can do are exactly what's happened, which is slow start, bad finish. Like they start the game in a hole, have to try to claw their way back, and then they get it close or they take a lead exactly like they did against Syracuse. And then it's like mental lapses, bad late game offense. And I do worry, I know last night was a bit of a anomaly. I mean, Syracuse shot 64%. If I saw the stats correctly, that's only the second time a team shot 60% or better against UNC since Dean Smith retired. And
I
the
think it was
other
since
time was,
2015, so not quite that far back.
I think it literally said since Roy Williams coached, that's only happened twice. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
I think you were right. I saw some stat that it was the highest since 2015, which maybe it happened like once under Roy or twice under
Yeah, that's
Roy.
true. It could, but Pitt shot 60% in 2015, so it's like it, yeah, but that's, to me that's just basketball. Did they hit tough shots? Yes, but why were they able to hit tough shots? Because our guards were putting little to no resistance on their guards from getting to their spots and getting to the mid-range. For example, JJ Starling cooked in the mid-range the entire night. I understand he hit some extremely tough shots, especially the three that he banked in. However, when a guy's killing you from the mid-range, you have to stop him from getting to the mid-range. Like it's just one of those things. Like he kept just shooting over RJ, who is a smaller guard, and it was just a recipe for disaster. Now, will someone shoot 64% against UNC again? Probably not. That's why the panic meter isn't high. If Syracuse shoots 42% and wins this game 86-79, then the panic meter's a little higher. But yeah, it's tough. And like you said, the late game execution is just, it does concern me a bit, because obviously you have one guy who can go get you a bucket, and that's RJ Davis. But I just feel like down the stretch of these games, people kind of just do the same thing, which is we're going to key in on RJ, someone else go get a bucket and beat us. And we've seen Ingram hit shots, not necessarily creating his own, but we've seen the ball swung to him and a team late on rotations, he hits a shot. That right there is why I think Cormack is like the X factor key for this team because, he did hit shots in the first half of this game. In the second half, he didn't. And I feel like down the stretch, teams just kind of, they're kind of rolling. They're like, if Cormac Ryan beats us with a big shot, then whatever. He's going to be huge because if he can hit those shots, then it completely changes UNC's late game offense. But I mean, like, what is the biggest, I guess, they obviously shot 64%, so you probably want to say defense, but like what happened last night?
Yeah, in my opinion, it was they let Starling and Mintz get comfortable in the mid-range. And I know I said it didn't seem like they were very aggressive, but I think that's exactly what it comes down to. And I don't think they're doing anything schematically different than how they were guarding against like Oklahoma back in December when they completely dogged those dudes for all 40 minutes. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything schematically that's different as far as still the no middle scheme. There's still some drop coverage from Armando mixed in. But I think like maybe the guards are getting hung on the screens too much or giving them too much of a cushion or not being aggressive enough with how tight they play them. And I think Carolina has generally, like if you go back to the Wake game, they forced them into a ton of tough mid-range shots, but they contested them. And just last night in that game, I mean, you can blame some of the size mismatch between Cadeau and RJ and Mintz and Starling, but if you go back and look at the game a month ago, Mintz kind of got his numbers late. Starling only had 8 points. We've seen this team be able to shut down bigger guards before. I mean, Hunter Salas, they were able to keep him in check. I don't think it's an effort thing. I think effort's sort of a crutch that is what fans say when they don't know how else to analyze the game, which is fine. Like we're fans for a reason, not coaches. But yeah, I think some of it was just a lack of aggressiveness or not being as locked in or as focused or even connected as a team and trusting one another. That's leading to some of these defensive lapses. And at the same time, like, you think about those Malik Brown pick and pop threes that he hit on the first, like two of the first three possessions of the game. I know Armando's being asked to do a lot because he is helping. I mean, he's helping whichever guard is being put in a ball screen. And Malik Brown has made four threes all season going into that game. So you don't want to knock him too much for not sprinting out to close out. At the same time, it's just like, closeouts just did not look good for those two possessions in particular.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing to me is they just feel a little lethargic. They feel a little, I'm not saying that they're not going after loose balls. I'm not saying that they're not still playing defense, but it doesn't seem like it seems like they're still getting outworked to those things. Like, for example, as bad as they played last night, they had a chance at the end to win this game, and the reason that they didn't is because Kwadir Copeland came in off the bench and made like four straight hustle and effort, I want it more than you plays. And unfortunately, Cormac lost two of them. There was a couple bad, like it's just, that's kind of the formula, though. You let a team do this the whole game, then when you have it close and you have a chance to win, the basketball gods punish you. And you had it 76-72. They missed the free throw. Cormac gets the rebound. Immediately, Copeland comes in, strips it off his leg after already giving up. So you give up that. I basically count that as an offensive rebound. Then they miss again. You give up another offensive rebound. That's just two plays where Syracuse wanted it more than you. I mean, it's like it's not coming down to effort the entire game. I just feel like they dig such a deep hole, climb their way back, that by the time the game is at its end, they've worked so hard to climb back into the game, they just don't have enough left in the tank to actually close it out. And you might disagree with me here, but do you not feel like when you watch this team, you kind of know whether they're going to win or lose within the first 10 minutes of a game.
Starting to feel like that a little bit. And yeah, I guess, I mean, I was really going to harp on the late game stuff because it was an issue against both Miami and Syracuse. With Miami, I mean, we don't have, there was a lot to like in parts of those games. I even thought going back to defense, like RJ guarded Nigel Pack really well, stayed in his stance and guarded the ball, kept his man in front of him, which we did not see happen against Syracuse. But, even down the stretch with the different turnovers, the missed free throws, the turnover on the inbounds, which again was like that little elevator screen, which I just think Carolina uses that a bit too much. It seems like anytime that the anytime a half is about to end, even when Hubert calls a timeout at the end of the first half, he often goes to those to run a little elevator screen for whoever he wants to get a shot for. And Miami snuffed it out, picked the pass, and almost scored off of it. So it's like that stuff. And then again, last night you mentioned all the turnovers. It's really tough. Going back to Clemson as well, when they tied it at 70, they finished the game 1-for-5 with, I think, 3 or 4 turnovers down the stretch. You're not going to be able to get back into games if you don't take shots, if you muff these possessions. But I think you're onto something well, is like as well with the slow starts that are just as concerning. And the fact that you come off of that win at Miami that was closer than it should have been, a game that you were able to control for the first 10 minutes and the final 17 minutes before Miami was crawling back in. You come into a game like that after nearly blowing a lead that you worked hard to get, and to have the slow start plague you again, just like against Clemson, it's a little bit baffling, a little bit mind-boggling how Carolina can go on these scoring droughts when we know, I mean, how good RJ Davis is. It seemed like whenever Armando got a position in the post, he was cooking whichever Syracuse big man was on him. Like, those dudes couldn't guard him, and he wasn't as aggressive as I would have liked to see. Sometimes I wonder why Ingram doesn't take more shots. Like, he gets good looks and he either hesitates or passes it. And it's like, dude, you're 42% 3-point shooter. Just let it fly. I promise your coach still loves you. I promise we as fans still love you and believe in you. Like, I think that's a good shot for Harrison Ingram to pull it, you know? It's just, it's tough.
It is. And that's like that's what they got to figure out, man. It's, you can't have slow starts and bad finishes and only play good in the middle portion of the game. And it's not even just the starts to the game. It's the starts to each half. I mean, last night they were right there and they start 0-for-8. Like, it's, and Syracuse is back up 10 before you know it. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if they got a little too cocky and comfortable and just kind of aren't coming out as locked in. And they're just like, well, I mean, we've been top 10 for the last 5, 6 weeks, whatever it is, you know, it's, we can afford to kind of go out there, go through the motions. But it's like our guy, T. Hands, said on After Dark last night, this team is simply not good enough to not show up on the defensive end. Like, they are talented. They're very talented. But they're not talented enough offensively to just take the night off on defense. It's like, this team goes as the defense goes. And I think you see that last night. I mean, they simply did not have the offensive firepower to overcome Syracuse shooting 64%. And, you know, 64% is 64%, but they scored 86 points. You know, I've seen UNC teams in the past that have the firepower to put up 90 and still win that game.
Right.
So that's the concern. It's.
Yeah. I think to the extent of the defense, just to contextualize how bad it was, Carolina shot 48% from the field. They hit 11 threes. They averaged 1.22 points per possession. Like, all of those numbers point to being good enough to win on the road. They scored 79. That usually gets it done on the road, but the defense just could not get a stop because guys couldn't stay in front of their man. And they didn't make up for it by aggressively hunting steals. I liked the adjustment to blitz ball screens in the second half. I kind of think Carolina should have gone to that earlier. That caused some turnover issues, or even go back to the full court press that seems to energize the team. And maybe Hubert was reluctant to do that based on Seth sort of getting back into the fold after missing the last two games. But I even think you can throw Pax in there for a couple minutes if guys need a breather. I think his offense, he's not really going to give you much on offense other than he at least goes for boards. He's pretty strong rebounder for his size and for his position. But if the goal is to get some turnovers and play aggressive defense for a 2 to 3 minute spurt, throw Pax in there. Give RJ a break. Give Kado a break. Whatever it is. And just try to get some live ball turnovers going. Like, or throw Withers in there for a 2 to 3 spurt stretch to use his length to be disruptive that way too. Like that, I think, yeah, the kind of hit on the main concerns with both the way Carolina starts and the way Carolina finishes. But I mean, the bench is also, yeah, I would say the bench is panic worthy as well. Now I feel like I'm going back on what I said, that I wasn't that panicked. I'm more frustrated. I'm still not, and I'll get into why I'm still confident in this team. But yeah, the way they start, the way they finish, and the bench are three things that have to be top of the list for Carolina to start fixing, both in this three-day stretch leading up to the Virginia game or the Virginia Tech game, and then the week off heading into the Virginia game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 as we all get ready for the best month of the year, March Madness. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you will get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $5 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. That's FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available in one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in Philly or New York, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create a new account in each state. It's easy, it's simple, and it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and my personal favorite, a nice little parlay boost here and there. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today.
Yeah, I mean, it's the holy trinity of UNC issues. So I do want to hit on the bench because I actually do have a bit of a JK theory here. So, you lose to Georgia Tech, cool. That Georgia Tech game was a little fluky. I wasn't really worried about that one. I do have a theory about these last two though. Clemson didn't shoot near as well as Syracuse, but the defense wasn't great in that game, and the defense was bad last night. So I'm thinking, and this is probably this could be a stretch, but it just seems this way. I feel like the starting five has been less physical and hasn't been as dominant defensively because with Seth Trimble's absence and the fact that he, came back last night, but he's still not 100%, they're putting pressure on themselves because they don't, necessarily trust the guys off the bench. They know they have to play a lot of minutes, so they're being less physical to avoid getting in foul trouble and having to go to those guys on the bench, which is kind of like the crutch of the Iron Five. Like, I think deep down they know that with Seth Trimble not being healthy, who do you trust coming off the bench? And I think that does probably get in their head a little bit because you notice the physicality has been way down in the last three games, especially compared to that Duke game. So I do think there is a little bit of like a mental warfare thing going on there where those guys are thinking to themselves, we cannot get in foul trouble. If we do, we're letting our team down. So they dial back on the physicality a bit. And I can't even blame Cadeau for not being physical because I don't even understand how that kid's officiated. But yeah, I do think there's a little bit of a mental thing there, man. That's JK theory.
Yeah, when Cadeau got smacked across the face last night, I feel like that's always, I don't know, I don't want to, again, this is the you know what? I'm gonna make an excuse and blame it on being a fan and not a coach. Or a player. Carolina should have won regardless of their officiating. Like you would have liked to see them play well enough to win, but I feel like that gets called a flagrant in 8 times out of 10 this year.
Yeah.
And like, why is the one guy who always gets called for ticky-tack fouls unable to draw a flagrant when he gets smacked in the face?
I didn't they like not even review it?
No, they didn't.
See, you're gonna tell me it just doesn't make sense because if there is facial contact, you're supposed to at least take a look at it. And I mean, I just it doesn't make sense because in the same game, they took a look at a Cormack foul where he clearly, yeah, he might have hit his arms hard, but he was clearly making a play on the ball and saying, I can't give up a layup here. They reviewed that. They reviewed the play at the end where Armando, like, I guess they viewed it as tackled Judah Mintz or whatever, but dude. We didn't even look at it. I'm telling you, man, I don't know if like I don't know if Cadeau said something to a ref at some point and it just spread through the reffing community and they're just not with it. I don't know if it's just an ACC thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they're trying to prove a point of like this kid should still be in high school, so we're gonna officiate him differently. I don't know what their problem is with Elliot Cadeau. But I've never seen someone get hit in the face and then not even go to the monitor.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And it just further compounded what was a frustrating night because we had to watch that and then watch like 5 minutes of UNC struggling to bust a zone.
Oh, man. Yeah, like,
Oh my gosh.
I just don't. Who's the guy for you that when teams are keying in on RJ, who's the guy that you trust as a shot creator? Obviously, if they're keying in on RJ, that probably means they're blitzing, sending late doubles, which means that if you do swing the ball quick enough, you can get guys open looks and you can catch the defense out of rotation, but You know, who's the guy you trust to go get a bucket besides RJ?
I mean, last night, I know he's not a quote, he's not really a shot creator, but I would have liked to see Armando just keep attacking attacking whichever big was on him from the middle of the zone. It seemed like whenever he wants to, he can, put his head down, either draw contact or get a bucket. And I know Armando finished with 14 and 10, and it's not going to blame that loss on him by any means, but I thought his defense could a little bit been a little bit better. Would have liked to see some more assertiveness on that end, or get Cadeau attacking and trying to get downhill. And I know that's going to have a mixed result sometimes, because he primarily wants to go right, and his shooting is hit or miss, though he did make a three last night. I mean, he puts pressure on the rim, and he draws a lot of contact as well. Or even, again, I'm just thinking about this zone. Throw some more Jalen Washington minutes at the middle of the zone. Let him just shoot mid-rangers all day, which he's very comfortable doing. Or let Ingram shoot a couple more mid-rangers, or play make for others. I think, yeah, just in this game specifically, there was a couple different routes Carolina could have gone for breaking this zone, and it just didn't happen. But maybe against a team that's not going to zone UNC, I still look just for ways to get Armando on the move and to keep him involved, whether it's through a cross screen or whatever sort of set you want to draw for him, to where he's not just trying to get a deep seal, or he's not just posting up, but you actually, take advantage of some of his mobility.
Yeah, that's honestly the biggest separator for me. I honestly do at the end of the day still trust the defense. I think we're going to see some serious stuff over these next six, especially with four of them being at home. I also just think Hubert's done a great job this year, so I trust him to make adjustments, light into these guys, get them fired up. But what scares me when I'm looking at like the AP poll and the top teams is I just feel like all of the teams ahead that I would put ahead of UNC, the number one reason I'd put them ahead is because they've got like two dudes who can go get a bucket last minute. You look at UConn, they've got a freaking plethora. Like you've got Cam Spencer, you've got Tristan Newton,
Stephon Castle.
you've got Stephon Castle. I mean, even Klingon, like in the right situations. You look at Purdue, you've got Braden Smith, you've got Fletcher Lawyer, you've got Zach Edey. You look at Houston, you've got Shedd, you've got LJ Cryer, who have both played college basketball for as long or longer than RJ Davis. You got Marquette, they've got Kolick, they've got Cam Jones, they've got Iguodaro. I just look at UNC and I'm like, who's going to be that guy? And, Armando can do it. I just think sometimes it's hard in late game sets to draw up plays for bigs because I feel like they just kind of key in on it. But I think the guy that can do it, and it's weird, man. He had the great game and then he's been super assertive ever since. But I want to see Ingram do it. I mean, he can. I mean, it's just ever since that Duke game, I feel like he just hasn't been shooting a lot. I mean, he had 11 shot attempts last night. He had seven against Miami, and he had seven against Clemson. There is no way ever that Harrison Ingram should not be second or third on this team in shot attempts on a nightly basis. That concerns me.
I'm with you. I think he does have to be the guy they go to, or look for ways to get him going downhill and let him draw some fouls. I know he hasn't been great at the free throw line, but at the same time, he has a lot of nights where he just attempts one or two free throws. So he's someone who I think they could be a little more creative with getting him going downhill, letting him use that size that he has. And it doesn't have to be, I would like to see a couple ball screens run for him, just because he saw a lot of possessions as a pick and roll ball handler at Stanford. You don't just get him a couple a game. I mean, I know we have Cadeau and RJ who are commanding most of the ball screen action, but see what, like, get a good look at that or something, or run him off I know we talked about running some zoom action for him, just because I want to see him get into the paint a little bit more and be able to draw contact. And yeah, even if he's not the most explosive, get the other team in foul trouble with him. I don't think UNC has just relegated him to being a spot up shooter. But there have been some games where it's sort of felt like his role is to just shoot, catch and shoot threes. And that's all he does. Or I shouldn't say that's all he does, but that's his main offensive role. And I just think he's more versatile than that and can do a little bit more than that.
Yeah. I mean, I can just tell you that I don't think there was a single possession last night where they attempted to get Harrison Ingram downhill or they attempted to get him switched onto a smaller guard mm-hmm. and let him go to work. He shot five threes. One of the field goal attempts came off the rebound where he was stuck under the basket and somehow created space to make that layup. And then I'm pretty sure the other attempt was probably either off a rebound or maybe like a midi through the zone or something. But it's a little baffling because I feel like Ingram is so good and I just like to see him more involved. You know, because we've seen him in the one game that he has been super involved in the offense. I'm just saying the results are there.
Yeah, what I will also go back to against, you could say, probably the three best teams we played this year, Tennessee, UConn, Duke. He has 20 or more points in all three of those. Big game player, get the man his shots. So, can I close on why I am still optimistic and why I'm not completely panicked?
Oh, absolutely. We'll give the people a little positivity to walk out on.
Yeah, I just think our guy, Greg Waddell, made this point on a Sleepers media recap of the game where he said Carolina has a month to figure it out before the tournament starts. It's good that they're encountering this now as opposed to the last week of February or going into the ACC tournament in the first week of March. It's nice to hit it's not nice to be in the rough stretch, but this is adversity happens in a college basketball season. I think Carolina's playing a lot closer to being ranked like the 8th to 12th best team in the country, like more in that range than the top three that I thought they were at, that we thought they were at, that they've shown flashes of being at for the past month. But maybe they can get back there. It's going to take more consistency on defense. And I think if UNC can just get one out of Zaden High or Jalen Withers to be playable, to give some minutes in the front court, to be able to go a little bit bigger and give Cormac a breather or give RJ extended time or whoever it is, if you're running a bigger lineup out there, that will go such a long way. And yeah, I know I said it earlier, but we have a solid sample size of them being really good this season. And I believe what my eyes showed me during that 10 game winning streak. I don't think shot luck was the only reason why they guarded other teams so well. So I think they get it turned around. I'm like about ready to say I know this might sound crazy coming off of these three recent losses, but I kind of think they go 6-0 or 5-1 down the stretch.
I think they're going to go 5-1 as well. I don't know which game they'll lose. I just feel like they're going to lose either at Virginia or at Duke, one of those two. Now Virginia losing last night obviously does soften the blow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think they're going to get it figured out down the stretch. They definitely have issues. I definitely trust Hubert to address those issues and fix them. I would like another guy to emerge off the bench. You know, don't know who it's going to be. Don't really care who it is as long as somebody does it. But mm-hmm. I feel decent. I think they... You know, Saturday will tell a lot. See how they come out against Virginia Tech at home, defend the home court, get some momentum going, you know, get the train headed back on the right track. I definitely think they could figure it out. And like you said, I mean, they're still a top 12 team. They might not be as good right now as we thought, but at the end of the day, you know, we also knew that they were probably going to play a bad stretch of basketball at some point. You don't win, you know, you don't win 10 straight games and then it's all just sunshine and rainbows the rest of the season. The only teams that do that are the teams that are super duper loaded with a million NBA players, like the Kentucky team in 2015 that went undefeated up until the Final Four. Like, it, that's just something that happens once in a freaking blue moon. I mean, even UConn and Purdue, as dominant as they are, like, they have two losses each. They've had games where they've struggled. Now they end up gutting out wins, and that's what separates them. But, you know, there's just not – there's no team in college basketball good enough this year to just maintain an insane win streak like that. So if UNC can figure it out down the stretch, go 5-1, finish the season 24-7, you know, I'll be feeling really good. I just hope one of the five that they win is at Cameron. That always makes it a little better. But, you know, one last thing before we get out. What would your projected seed line for UNC be right now? Like, based today, on how you base right now versus what do you think it will be if they finish 5-1 or 6-0?
Yeah, I think they're playing like a three seed right now. They don't look like a one or a two, based on these past three games. They have the resume to still be on that two line probably, but inching closer and closer to a three seed. But I think they get back on the two line and that they're solidly on it. I will say if they win at both Virginia and Duke, you're looking at 8 quad one wins. The Wake Forest win at home and the win at NC State could both end up being quad one as well. If you can get to 9 to 10 Q1 wins going into the ACC tournament, you're feeling pretty good about your chances as a one seed.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, they got to go. If they want to be a one seed, they have to win out in the regular season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, win out, be 26-6, get your 2 quad one wins. And then I know you're a big truther in the tournament, the conference tournament doesn't matter, but you know, if they can win 2 to 3 more games, just to boost the record up a little bit. I also think that's the other thing that sucks is they've put themselves in a position where they don't control their own destiny anymore. So they're going to need other things to happen. They're going to need the teams ahead of them to lose. So it's going to be interesting. But I agree. I think they're probably a two. I think right now they'd be a three, but with how against the ACC the NCAA is, I could also see them being like a four because how much they hate the ACC. Like, I could see them being like, oh my God, losing to Syracuse is the end of the world. But, you know, if they were in the Big 12, you know, the sky wouldn't be falling like this. But, yeah I mean, they'll figure it out. We'll be back next week sometime after the Virginia Tech game. Hopefully we will not be coming on this pod saying, yeah, UNC's lost 4 out of the last 6. I think we're going to be saying, all right, back on the right track, big win at home against Virginia Tech. And then it gets a little interesting from there, man. But, yeah, I'm feeling good. Riley, any closing comments?
We got a big-time guest who will be joining us for our next pod that will be recording on Tuesday night. So I'm just going to throw that teaser out there. Let's see. Is there anything else that I want to give a clue on who it might be? Get your mops ready. That's all I'll say.
Yep. Hey, I got another one for you TikTok fans out there. One of the words in this. If you're a fan of the I'm just a little lad who loves something and something. One of those words. That guy's going to be in here. Just know that. All right. We'll see y'all next time. Enjoy some UNC hoops this weekend. Enjoy your Valentine's days, you know, all that fun stuff. Stay safe, everybody. See you next week.